Remembering Bob Simon.
This desolate road is destined to become a main battleground.
New Ukraine deal.
We have reached agreement on a ceasefire.
Three winning Powerball tickets.
A nice chunk of change.
Good morning. I'm Steve Kathan with the CBS World News Roundup.
I'm Bob Simon.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories tonight on 60 Minutes.
Bob Simon, a familiar face on 60 Minutes and a journalist who covered almost every major overseas conflict in the last half century, died yesterday in a New York City car crash. He was 73. Bob Simon got his start in the 1960s on the battlefields of Vietnam.
We're going to pick up an American. All we know about him is that he's at Firebase Andrews and that he's been hit by shrapnel.
He was there when Nelson Mandela tasted freedom in South Africa.
After 27 years, his head was high and his fist was clenched. Nelson Mandela walked out of Victor Forster prison today like a chief of state.
During the Gulf War in 1991, Simon and three members of his CBS News team spent 40 days in Iraqi prisons.
They took us away.
And we eventually wound up in the secret police headquarters called the Muhabarat. And treated very badly.
Former CNN correspondent Frank Sesno.
He was intrepid and brave, and he went into the field even when he wasn't supposed to, because he said to the world, this is my job. I have to be there. I have to be your eyes.
60 Minutes executive producer Jeff Fager says Simon could get to the essence of any story.
He just knew how to tell a story, and he knew how to tell a story so then an audience could get a better appreciation for what was really happening. He was just great at that. A real giant.
Bob Simon's last story for 60 Minutes will air this weekend. It's about the work being done on an Ebola drug. His daughter Tanya produced the report. Overseas now to Minsk, Belarus, and the marathon talks designed to bring an end to the fighting in eastern Ukraine. Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, was the first to declare a breakthrough.
We had to work with the circumstances we had, and we have been able to agree on a lot of things. The first thing is a ceasefire starting at midnight on the 15th of February.
But Ukraine's president says there's still wide disagreement about a lot of things, including autonomy for the battle-torn region. Germany and France were part of these talks. German Chancellor Merkel calls it a glimmer of hope. A House committee begins work today on President Obama's call for a three-year plan to fight ISIS.
As Commander-in-Chief, I will only send our troops into harm's way when it is absolutely necessary for our national security.
Nancy Pelosi and some Democrats worry it might lead to bogged down ground action.
I do think that in the country there is no appetite for any boots on the ground except in limited circumstances, and that scope is the debate that we will be engaged in.
Republicans are concerned the authorization might hamstring military commanders. There was action yesterday in the GOP-controlled House.
On this vote, the yeas are 270, the nays are 152. The bill is passed.
The Keystone XL oil pipeline bill is now cleared Congress. It heads to President Obama, who says he'll veto it. There aren't enough votes to override the veto. Well, today the president signs a bill designed to stem the tide of veteran suicides. CBS's August Skamenka says the measure is named for a Texas Marine sniper who took his own life back in 2011.
The weight of what's experienced on the battlefield translates to an epidemic of 22 veterans that kill themselves every day. Ronaldo Youngblood is an Army staff sergeant.
I've had four people within my units commit suicide.
Justin Masters served as a Marine corporal. A new Clay Hunt, who the legislation is named for.
It might have taken him taking his life, but at least others are, you know, they're taking something from it.
The president's signature will put into motion a range of reforms, including independent reviews of the Pentagon, VA, and their suicide prevention programs. August Skamenka, CBS News, Houston.
If you played the Powerball lottery yesterday, you probably know the news.
25 gets us started, and right after that, we have the number 11. Next up tonight,
there's a split of the enormous jackpot. Powerball's Sue Dooley.
There were three winning tickets sold, one in North Carolina, one in Puerto Rico, and one in Texas. So the three of them will split our $564.1 million.
The Puerto Rico ticket is the first big Powerball winner sold outside the continental U.S. In Stephenville, Texas, it's day two of the American Sniper trial. Yesterday, Chris Kyle's widow held tight to military dog tags as she talked about her husband's final moments just before he went to a gun range where he was shot and killed. Attorneys seeking an insanity defense for ex-Marine Eddie Ray Routh and legal expert Paul Applebaum says that's a tough sell.
The standard that they apply in Texas focuses narrowly on whether the defendant knew that what he was doing was wrong.
His family says Routh suffers from post-traumatic stress. We're learning more about the suspect in the killing of three Muslim college students in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
I'm Jim Krasula. Neighbors in Chapel Hill say 46-year-old Craig Stephen Hicks often seemed angry and frequently confronted them. An ex-wife said he was obsessed with shooting rampage movies. His current wife says she's filing for divorce. Hicks described himself on Facebook as, quote, a gun-toting atheist.
Police are also looking into whether religious hatred played any role. The head of Boston's mass transit system says she'll step down in April. There's been plenty of criticism over the service interruptions caused by the string of heavy snowstorms. Tom Koch is mayor of Quincy.
Now, I know these are extraordinary days and historic snows, but the length of time for closures, it's unacceptable. It really is.
And forecasters say another storm will batter eastern New England over the weekend. Some areas could get close to a foot of snow. West Coast ports, normally bustling places, will be quiet the next few days. In the midst of a labor dispute, companies are locking workers out. CBS's Steve Futterman is in Los Angeles.
This partial shutdown will affect ports up and down the West Coast, including the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, which handle around 40% of the nation's container traffic. The move comes as tensions increase between shipping companies and dock workers. The dock employees have been working without a contract since last July.
Well, it's going to be a year in prison for that airline executive who ordered a commercial jet back to the gate at JFK Airport in New York when she was served macadamia nuts in a bag instead of on a plate. That's the decision today from a court in South Korea. The woman is the daughter of the head of Korean Air. Scientists are getting a better handle on memory. CBS's Jim Shenevy has the story.
How come you can name that tune?
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody.
But not the name of the person you were just talking to. Researchers at Georgia Tech's Memory and Aging Lab have found that listening to music can affect the way the brain processes memories, and the effect is more pronounced the older you get. In tests on college-age men and women, music didn't affect memory that much. But in older adults, there appeared to be about a 10% decline in recall. As people age, it becomes harder for them to ignore irrelevant noises and concentrate. Jim Shenevy, CBS News.
Oregon Governor John Kitzhaber had told his aides he was going to resign, and it appeared the announcement was going to come out tomorrow. But he changed his mind and now vows to stay in office. There are calls for him to step down amid allegations his fiancée used his office to help land business deals. And that's the World News Roundup for Thursday. I'm Steve Kathan, CBS News.